This is Audible.
Recorded Books and RB Digital present History Is All You Left Me by Adam Silvera, narrated by Tom Picasso.
Today, Monday, November 20th, 2016. You are still alive in alternate universes, Theo, but I live in the real world, where this morning you're having an open casket funeral. I know you're out there, listening. And you should know I'm really pissed because you swore you would never die. And yet, here we are. It hurts even more because this isn't the first promise you've broken. I'll break down the details of this promise again. You made it last August. Trust me when I say I'm not talking down to you as I recall this memory and many others in great detail. I doubt it'll even surprise you, since we always joked about how your brain worked in funny ways. You knew enough meaningless trivia to fill notebooks, but you occasionally slipped on the bigger things, like my birthday this year, May 17th, not the 18th. And you never kept your night classes straight, even though I got you a cool planner with zombies on the cover, which you know who probably forced you to throw out. I just want you to remember things the way I do. And if bringing up the past annoys you now, as I know it did when you left New York for California, know that I'm sorry, but please don't be mad at me for reliving all of it. History is all you left me. We made promises to each other on the day I broke up with you so you could do your thing out there in Santa Monica without me holding you back. Some of those promises took bad turns, but weren't broken, like how I said I never hate you even though you gave me enough reasons to, or how you never stopped being my friend even when your boyfriend asked you to. But on the day we were walking to the post office with Wade to ship your boxes to California, you walked backward into the street and almost got hit by a car. I saw our endgame. To find our way back to each other when the time was right, no matter what. Disappear. And I made you promise to always take care of yourself and never die. Fine. I'll never die, you said as you hugged me. If there was a promise you were allowed to break, it wasn't that one. And now I'm forced to approach your casket in 1 hour to say goodbye to you. Except, it's not going to be goodbye. I'll always have you here, listening. But being face to face with you for the first time since July, and for the last time ever, is going to be impossible. Especially given the unwanted company of your boyfriend. Let's leave his name out of my mouth as long as possible this morning, okay? If I'm going to have any chance of getting through today, tomorrow, and all the days that follow, I think I need to go back to the start, where we were two boys bonding over jigsaw puzzles and falling in love. It's what comes after you fell out of love with me that it all goes wrong. It's what comes after we broke up that's making me so nervous. Now, you can see me, wherever you are. I know you're there, and I know you're watching me, tuned into my life to piece everything together yourself. It's not just the shameful things I've done that are driving me crazy, Theo. It's because I know I'm not done yet. History. Sunday, June 8th, 2014. I'm making history today. Time is moving faster than this L train, but it's all good since I'm sitting to the left of Theo McIntyre. I've known him since middle school, when he caught my eye at recess. He waved me over and said, "Help me out, Griffin. I'm rebuilding Pompeii." A puzzle of Pompeii made up of 100 pieces, obviously. I knew nothing of Pompeii at the time. I thought Mount Vesuvius was the hidden lair of some comic book overlord. Theo's hands had entranced me, sorting the puzzle pieces into groups, according to shades before beginning, separating the granite rows from the demolished, ash-coated structures. I helped with the sky, getting the clouds all wrong. We didn't get very far with the puzzle that day, but we've been tight ever since. Today's outing takes us from Manhattan to Brooklyn to see if the lost treasures in some flea market are as overpriced as everyone says they are. No matter where we are, Brooklyn or Manhattan, a schoolyard or Pompeii, I've planned on changing the game up on Theo on this even-numbered day. I just hope he's down to keep playing. "At least we have the place to ourselves," I say. It's almost suspicious how empty the subway car is, but I'm not questioning it. I'm too busy dreaming up what it would be like to always share this space and any other space with this know-it-all who loves cartography, puzzles, video animation. I'm finding out what makes humans tick. On a crowded train, Theo and I usually squeeze together when we sit, our hips and arms pressed against one another's. And it's a lot like hugging him, except I don't have to let go so quickly. It sucks that Theo sits directly across from me now, but at least I get the very awesome view. Blue eyes that find wonder in everything, including train ads for teeth whitening. Blonde hair that darkens when it's wet. The Game of Thrones t-shirt I got him for his birthday back in February. "It's a lot harder to people watch without people," Theo says. His eyes lock on me. "There's you, I guess." "I'm sure there will be some interesting people at the flea market, like hipsters." "Hipsters are characters, not people," Theo says. "Don't hipster shame. Some of them have real feelings underneath their beanie hats and vintage flannels." Theo stands and does a bullshit pull-up on the rail. His brain gets him top marks, but his muscles can't carry him as high. He gives up and hops back and forth between the train benches like some underground trapeze artist. I wish he would somersault to my side and stay put. He holds on to the railing and stretches his leg to the opposite bench, and his shirt rises a little, so I peek at his exposed skin peripherally while keeping my focus on Theo's grin. It might be my last day to do so. The train rocks to a stop, and we get off, finally. Manhattan is home and all, so Theo never badmouths it, but I know he wishes more of its walls were stained with graffiti, like they are here in Brooklyn, bright in the summer sun. Theo points out his favorites on the way to the flea market. A little boy in black and white, walking across colorful block letters spelling out dream. An empty mirror demanding to find the fairest of them all in a crazy neat cursive that rivals Theo's perfect handwriting. An airplane circling Neptune, which is just fantastical enough that it doesn't give me flying anxiety. Night seated around Earth, like it's their round table. Neither of us have any idea what it's supposed to mean, but it's pretty damn cool. It's a long, hot walk to the flea market located by the East River. Theo spots a refreshment truck, and we spend $5 each on cups of frozen lemonade, except there isn't enough of the sugary slush left, so we're forced to chew ice to survive the heat. Theo stops at a table with Star Wars goods. His face scrunches up when he turns to me. $70 for that toy lightsaber? Theo's inside voice sucks. It's a problem. The 40-something vendor looks up. "It's a recalled saber," she says flatly. "It's rare, and I should be charging more." Her shirt reads, "Princess Leia is not the damsel in distress you're looking for." Theo returns her glare with an easy smile. "Did someone pull an Obi-Wan and cut someone's arm off?" My knowledge on all things Star Wars is pretty limited, and the same goes for Theo's knowledge on all things Harry Potter. He's the only 16-year-old human I know who isn't caught up on everyone's favorite boy wizard. One night, we argued for a solid hour over who would win in a duel between Lord Voldemort and Darth Vader. I'm surprised we're still friends. "The battery hatch snaps off easily, and children can't seem to keep them out of their damn mouths," the woman says. She isn't talking to Theo anymore. She's talking to an equally unhappy dude her age who can't figure out an R2-D2 alarm clock. "Okay, then," Theo salutes her, and we walk away. We stroll for a few minutes, 6 to be exact. "Are we done here?" I ask. It's hot, and I'm melting, and we've definitely seen that some of the treasures are way pricier than they legally should be. "Hell no, we're not done," Theo says. "We can't leave empty-handed." "So buy something." "Why don't you buy me something?" "You don't need that lightsaber. No, stupid. Buy me something else. It's safe to assume you're buying me something too, right?
Seems fair, Theo says.
He taps his dangerous watch. It is actually, for real, dangerous, as in it's not safe to wear. I'm not even sure how or why it got made.
Because its sharp sundial hands have scratched unsuspecting people's bodies, mine included, enough times that he should throw it in a fireplace and kill it dead and then sue the manufacturer.
He wears it anyway because it's different. Let's meet at the entrance in 20 minutes. Ready? Go! Theo dashes away, nearly crashing into a bearded man with a little girl sitting on his shoulders. He is out of sight in seconds. I check the time on my phone, 4:18, even minute, and I speed in the opposite direction into an airy labyrinth full of people's relics for sale. I run past crates of old sneakers, crooked rows of smudged mirrors like a filthy funhouse, poles with floral pashminas that billow from a hidden fan, and buckets of seashells sold in tandem with paintbrushes. The seashells are kind of cool, I guess, but they don't really scream, Theo. A minute or so later, I hit a grid of the market that does speak Theo's language. A dream catcher with a willow hoop dyed his favorite shade of green. An entire table of tiny ships inside bottles. He was recently reading up on their intricacies in the hopes of making one himself, except I know he wants his bottle to have a spaceship inside because he always has to put his Theo twist on things. I still have all the time in the world, if the world only had 12 minutes to offer, at least. It's too bad he's not more of a fantasy fan, because the letter openers here are pretty boss, and I'm sort of hoping he's found this table already and will surprise me with one, preferably the one designed like a sword sheath or this one with the bone handle. It's okay, because I have all the time in the world. Actually, right now, no, I don't, because according to my phone, I only have 9 minutes, an odd number that's getting me really anxious, so I scratch my palm while running again. I somehow return to a world of more misses. Theo has no current use for breakfast-friendly pots and pans since he's pretty happy eating bowls of cereal with orange juice, and he definitely doesn't need gardening tools unless they come with instructions on how he can grow more video games and computer apps for free. Then I hit the jackpot. Puzzles. I glance at my phone again, 6 minutes left. I'm no longer anxious. I'm excited. I know from being over at Theo's enough that he doesn't own any of these. A steampunk barn house gliding away on wings built of scraps from a satellite. Santa's sleigh being pulled by dolphins underwater. I don't want to know what's in those wrapped gifts, but I'd love to hear Theo's guesses. A 3D puzzle of a soccer ball, and the 3D part is cool, but the sports part is less cool. I'm not sure where Theo stands on 3D puzzles, but this doesn't seem like the one to kick it off. Boom. Got it. The fourth one in the row on the table. Doomed pirate ship. The pirates are being thrown overboard by stormy weather and a raging sea. Some try to climb back up, while another hangs from the plank. I know Theo will create a kick-ass story behind this one. The vendor drops the puzzle in a brown plastic bag, and even though it costs $9, I just shove a 10 into her hands and jet back. Theo was waiting by the exit, pressed against the wall to hide away in the shade, like a vampire who stayed out too late. Too early? I don't blame him. We're both sweating. He looks at his sundial watch. 2 minutes to spare! Let's get the hell out of here before we go up in flames, or worse, you get sunburn. On the way back to the subway, the only clue I have of his gift is a box. It's a perfect cube. I have zero guesses as to what it is. Underground, we're hidden from the sun, but the mugginess of a crowded platform is unbearable in its own way, like we've set up camp at the top of a volcano and zipped our tent shut.
We somehow survived the 6-minute wait. And once the train opens its doors, we race to the corner bench and sit before a couple of college-age-looking guys can take the seats for themselves.
The air conditioner is on full blast, and I feel more like myself.
Presents? Theo asks, pointing at my bag with finger guns.
You finish shopping first, so you go first, I say, inching my leg a little closer to his so our knees might accidentally touch.
I'm not sure what kind of logic that is, but okay, Theo says.
He gives me the little box, and whatever is inside doesn't weigh that much, and slides back and forth as I toss it from hand to hand. I open it and pull out an ornament of none other than Ron Weasley, Harry Potter's best friend. "What do you think?" Theo asks. "I know he's your favorite character, so you probably already have this, but I thought this one was cool, especially since he's got that seeing better days roughness going on." I nod. "It's true. This Ron Weasley figurine is a little beat up, the paint chipped on his red hair and black robe. But he's not my favorite character. It's an easy mistake, because Ron is my favorite in the trio. Sorry, Harry. Sorry, Hermione. And it's not as if they make ornaments for characters that were only alive and important in one book. But Cedric Diggory is my absolute favorite character in the series, in any book, really. When Cedric died at the end of the Triwizard Tournament, I cried for way longer than I've ever admitted to anyone. Cedric's death is no doubt my most painful loss ever, but it's okay. It's not like I know for sure who Theo's favorite Star Wars character is. I want to say Yoda, but that sounds stupid, even to me. It's the thought that counts." "This is awesome," I say, "and I don't own it already, so thanks." I wonder if the previous owner got over the series and pawned this little guy for 50 cents or something. One man's loss and all that, I guess. "Okay, your turn."
I'm missing the emptiness of the train we rode out, hyper-alert that there are nameless spectators watching us exchange gifts and drawing their own conclusions about how we must be dating.
It sucks that they're wrong. It double sucks that there's a chance Theo may be too scared to even be my friend after today. Theo slides the puzzle out of the bag and his eyes widen. "Hell yes. 800 pieces. You have to put this together with me."
"What's the story behind it?"
Theo studies it for a moment.
"It's about the impending zombie pirate apocalypse, obviously."
"Obviously. Tell me, how did the pirates get hit with the virus before anyone else?"
"The zombie virus has always existed, but the scientists knew it was best to keep it as far away from land as possible. They knew humans by nature are stupid and bored and would do something like unleash hell on the world if it meant not having to go to their dead-end jobs on Monday morning. Scientists contained the virus on an island. I'm redacting the name because I can't trust you with the secret, Griff. And they didn't account for the raging storm you see here destroying the island and releasing the virus until it became airborne, hitting the traveling pirates first. Well, infecting the parrot of Captain Hoyt Sumner first, who carried the virus onto the Pillaging Mary."
Only then do I lose it and smile. "How the hell are you coming up with these names?"
"I didn't make it up. It's in all the textbooks. Read up on your future's history," Theo says.
"What's the parrot's name?"
"Fulton. But everyone calls her Rot Feathers after she makes all the pirates undead. They later renamed the ship the Blood-Curdling Crawler, which feels appropriate."
I really want to spend an hour inside his head, climbing all the different whirling clockwork gears.
"These zombie pirates are smart enough to rename their ship?" I ask him. "We're screwed."
"You better be my partner against the zombie pirates," Theo says. "I know how to save us." Theo launches into different strategies we can employ to survive the apocalypse. "We'll need to build a fortress somewhere up high, with cannons and other practical weapons, like military crossbows that shoot flaming arrows. Easy. I almost feel like I can already wield one from all the fantasy books I've read. Apparently, I'll also have to learn how to cook, because Theo will be too busy keeping watch 24/7. He's pretty sure he'll have figured out the key to eternal unrest while we undead are among us, and won't have time to cook, or we'll end up dinner ourselves."
"Sound good, Griff?"
"I can't promise the food I cook will even be edible, but desperate times call for desperate measures." Theo holds out his hand, and we shake on it, locking down our roles in the zombie pirate apocalypse. Touching him gets my heart pounding, fast and heavy. I let go. "I have to tell you something." The subway car is rattling and loud, and the curious eyes have drifted. Everyone else is lost in their own world.
There's something I have to tell you, too, Theo says.
Who goes first?
Rock, paper, scissors.
We both play rock.
Same time?
Theo suggests.
I don't think my thing is something to shout at the same time. You can go first.
Trust me. I'm betting we're both going to say the same thing. It'll be easier this way, Theo says.
I'm not going to keep fighting him on this. Maybe what he has to say is worse than mine, and I won't feel as bad.
Countdown from 3?
4.
Theo half smiles, then nods. 4, 3, 2, 1.
I think I might be crazy, I spit out while he says, I like you.
Theo blushes, his half smile gone.
Wait, what?
He shifts his body around and stares out the train window, but we're underground, so all he'll see is darkness and his reflection.
I thought you were going to say you like me.
Are you gay, Griff?
Yeah, I admit, for the first time ever, which somehow doesn't have my heart racing or my face heating up. All I know is I would have lied to anyone else.
Good. I mean cool, Theo says.
It seems like he's flirting with the idea of making eye contact again before keeping his gaze to the window.
Why were you scared to tell me? That you think you're crazy?
Right. That's the second thing. I think I might have OCD.
Your room is too messy, Theo says.
It's not about being organized. You know how lately I'm always forcing my way into everyone's left side? It wasn't like that when we were kids. There's also my counting thing, where I prefer everything to be an even number, with a couple of exceptions, like 1 and 7. Volume, the timer on the microwave, how many chapters I read before putting a book down, even how many examples I use in a sentence. It's distracting, and I always feel on.
Theo nods.
I've felt like this before, too. Maybe not as intense, but I think it's just a sign of your genius.
I'm pretty sure Nikola Tesla was obsessed with the number 3 and would sometimes walk around the block 3 times before entering a building.
But, Griff, for all we know, these compulsions might just turn out to be little quirks.
His blue eyes find my face again, lit.
We can do some research later.
Maybe he's right. Maybe I'm not just some delusional kid with a neck tick who scratches his palms whenever he's nervous, favors everyone's left side, tugs at his earlobe, and operates in evens. Maybe it's like auto-focusing a camera, where I'm zooming in on one thing and missing everything else.
It's been freaking me out a little bit, like I don't know how I'm going to be in the future. I'm scared something can grow from this and turn me into a griffin who's too complicated for you to be friends with in a few years. I can't believe I'm unloading all this. It feels surreal, incredible, but I can't stop.
Maybe confessing everything will jinx any illnesses.
Theo scoots closer to me.
I have real things to be worried about, dude. Like if the zombie pirates are going to know how to use grappling hooks and matchlocks, or if they're taking us down with teeth and nails.
You don't scare me, and you'll never be too complicated for my friendship.
Theo pats my knee. His hand rests there for a solid minute.
And I'm sorry if I forced you to come out just now.
Wait, am I the first person you've told?
I nod, my heart pounding.
You didn't force me. Okay, actually, you did a little, but I wanted to tell you anyway. I just didn't have the balls or some huge speech.
I was also a little scared I was wrong about my instincts for you. Delusions run on my mother's side of the family.
You're not delusional, Theo says. And you're not crazy.
He reaches for my hand, and it's not for a high five. I know the world hasn't changed,
What goes up still has to come down. But the way I see it, the world has shifted a little to the right, moving forward. And I can now see it the way I've always wanted to. I hope I don't say or do anything that will force the world to shift counterclockwise again. I squeeze Theo's hand, testing whatever it is we're doing here. And I feel like I'm answering a question I was never brave enough to ask. Stick with me here, okay? Theo says. I'm not exactly about to walk off a moving train. Theo lets go of my hand. I sink in a little, like I failed him. I've never told anyone this, but I've been dreaming of alternate universes for a couple of years. You know me, I'm always asking myself, what if? He turns away for a second. Lately, I've been asking myself that more and more. A lot of the what-ifs are fun, but a lot of them are also really personal. Every night before I go to sleep, I find all the notes I've written on scrap paper or on my phone, and I archive them in this journal. Dozens and dozens of alternate universes. The train stops suddenly. Passengers leave and others get on, giving us a little more breathing space. But once the doors close, Theo has my full attention again. I wrote one on the inside of my arm earlier, during the gift hunt, he continues. I'm not going to show you yet. No spoilers. But it just reminded me of something. Every universe I've created lately, your face keeps popping up in it. And I thought that if you can't be cool with that, then I wouldn't hate you, but I might need some time for myself until we've had enough distance that I can imagine made-up worlds without you automatically appearing. Theo turns, and above his left elbow is his handwriting. Not the usual perfection, because even he can't write on himself neatly. And he holds it closer. The scrawl reads, Alternate Universe. I'm dating Griffin Jennings, and that's that. I don't know if that makes sense to you at all, but I want that to be real, Theo says, still holding his arm out to me, as if to burn those messy letters into my memory. If it can't, I understand, and I hope we can still figure out how to be best friends. I just can't imagine never taking this shot. He lowers his arm finally. You've got to say something now. I feel like someone has drop-kicked me into an alternate universe of awesomeness. I can't believe this is a conversation I'm having. I can't believe I'm legit flirting with Theo, and he's flirting back. The universe is clicking with me just fine. I can't tell him all these things, not yet, at least. I was going to, I say. Okay, but only say something if it's good. If it sucks, shut up. I've been freaking out for a while about the same thing, dude. I don't know when I would have manned up and said something, but it wouldn't have beat your bit about the alternate universes. I would have just said I like you.
Were you going to at least mention how handsome I am?
Handsome seems like a strong word, but I would have talked about how you're cool to look at, sure.
Good to know.
I should tell him how much I like the sound of his writing, the words he puts down in his notebooks when he's hunched over his desk. I want to know what they are. I should tell him about the fantasies I've had, where the next time I sleep over at his house and we share his bed, that we wouldn't have to use separate comforters and could maybe share one blanket one day without it being weird. I should tell him how fun it is to watch him flip an hourglass over and see if he can complete a massive puzzle by himself, and how I'm always rooting for him to succeed because I know how happy he is when he wins. I should tell him how much I appreciate the way he's been gravitating to my right lately. But I don't say any of this out loud right now, because maybe I can admit this to him when it's happening in real time. Why today, Theo?
The photo Wade took of us yesterday, Theo says.
It hits me
that I hadn't once thought of Wade during today's adventure. We're a three-dude squad, but I don't seem to get too anxious of the oddness versus evenness battle there, maybe because we always seem to make it work. It's the universe's one exception. Like yesterday afternoon, at Theo's place we played a Super Smash Brothers tournament, Theo and I versus Wade and the computer, teams forged by drawing names from Wade's fitted cap. It was close because Wade's really good with Bowser, and the computer level was at its highest, but Theo and I won with Captain Falcon and Zelda. We stood up, victorious, and hugged each other as if we had just won a war against aliens, or, even more fitting as of 10 minutes ago, a war against the zombie pirates. Wade had us pose. Theo and I faked our best serious faces, but we failed and cracked up. I saw us together and thought, enough was enough. I've wanted to be with you for a while now. Wade's pick made it a little more unbearable not to be with you, Theo says. I feel the same way, I guess, I say. What now? How do we lock this down? Probably a kiss or something, but I'm not in the mood. I trip over the last part because, honestly, it's a lie. I decide I'm swearing off lying because telling the truth can bring this kind of happiness, the kind that opens infinite alternate universes. I just really wish I had a piece of gum, but Wade is our squad's gum guy. Maybe a handshake? We shake hands, and neither of us lets go. This is cool, but weird, I say. Very cool, very weird, Theo says. But I think we fit, right? No doubt, Theo. I can't wait to see what happens next. Today, Monday, November 20th, 2016. The alarm clock finally shuts up after 10 minutes, but my parents' threats to pop my door open keep coming. Last time they did this, I lost my privacy for 2 months until my dad finally replaced the lock. I don't think I ever told you about that. It was after we broke up. Griffin! 10 more minutes, I shout. You said that an hour ago, Mom says. 6 times, Dad adds. Get dressed. I'll be out in 10 minutes, I say. I promise. The last time I wore a black suit was for your cousin, Alan's wedding on Long Island. It was a couple of months after we'd finally started dating, and it was our first formal party, too, if we don't count your sister's baptism. To my relief, Wade, back when we were still close with him, was wrong when he said all gay weddings are like Katy Perry concerts. I don't think my anxiety could have handled dancing with you for the first time under strobe lights. When I saw the white roses in the manor's sunroom, I began looking ahead to the day I'd get to wear a black suit as I stood across from you, my hands in yours, ready to say, "You're damn right I do." I didn't know it then, but that was the last time I'd wear a black suit, ever. I'm definitely not dressing up in one now. I'm going to the funeral as is. Okay, not completely as is, because showing up in these thermal pants might offend your grandmother. But I'm not taking off the green hoodie you gave me the afternoon we lost our virginity. I've been wearing it for the past 2 days. More, exactly 50 hours, though time has been bleeding in places. I wish I never washed the damn hoodie now that you're gone. It no longer smells like your grandmother's old flower shop. It doesn't have the dirt stains from all the times we spent at the park. It's like you've been erased. I grabbed 2 of the 4 magnetic griffins you got me 2 Christmases ago and fixed them to the hoodie, one on my collarbone and the other on my heart. It's like the blue one is chasing the green one through the sky. I stare at the clock, waiting for the next even minute, 9:26, and get out of bed. I step directly onto last night's dinner, forgetting I had abandoned the plate down on the floor while I stared up at the ceiling, thinking about all the questions I'm too scared to ask you. But hey, if there's one bright side to your dying, it's that you aren't around to tell me things I don't like hearing. I'm sorry. That was a dickhead thing to say. I need a condom for my mouth. As much as I would like to go sit in the bathtub and let the shower rain down on me, I've got to get out of this room. I check the clock on my open laptop and leave once it switches from 9:31 to 9:32. The hallway is lined with photographs and the cheap frames my aunt gave us last Christmas, the kind of present my mother dismisses as not thoughtful, but since she's so nice, she puts them up anyway. She still drinks out of the Yoda mug you bought her 2 years ago. No occasion at all. Just because. You're always going to be a presence for my parents, even if now they can't see your history on our walls. I'm hoarding all the photographs and their cheap frames in my room. There are blank spots as I pass. The one of us sitting in your childhood living room on Columbus Avenue, putting together a puzzle of the Empire State Building. Us at 16, 15. You wrapping your arms around my waist after some joke from Wade about boys not being able to hug other boys. You smiling at me from across another park bench as I toasted to my parents' anniversary last year, and my favorites, side by side in the same frame. The first was taken by Wade, a blank-faced photo of us doing our damn best to keep our smiles in but failing. The second is of us holding each other and smiling after we came out to our parents at Denise's birthday party. You were always a fan of the sun glare above your head. Like a cool, badass angel of destruction, you said. The angel that gets a blazing sword while you get a harp. In the living room, my parents are already in their jackets, and my dad is holding his baked goods in his lap as they stare at the muted news on TV. Mom sees me first and pops up, which I know is bad on her back, especially on rainy days like today. She hides the pain and approaches me cautiously, unsure which griffin she's about to get. I'm ready, I lie. I'm hungry. I'm drained. I'm over it all. And I'm not ready. But there's a clock on this thing. The service is today. The burial is tomorrow. I don't know what comes after that. Mom reaches out to me like I'm some toddler that's supposed to take his first steps into her arms. It's ridiculous. I'm a 17-year-old grieving his favorite person. I grab my jacket and turn for the door. I'll be outside. When we're all settled in the car, my dad puts on the radio to fill the silence. I stare outside the window as we stop at a red light, counting pairs for some sanity. Two women in jackets sharing a blue umbrella. Two old guys pushing shopping carts out of a market. Four beaten down trees in a community garden. Two trash cans piled high with garbage. The counting brings me some relief, but it's not enough. I drop my right hand to the empty space beside me, imagining your hand on mine. Two hands. That feels better. History. Monday, June 9th, 2014. It's routine after school for Theo, Wade, and me to go to the Barnes & Noble on the Upper West Side to do our homework, but classes are almost over. We browse the shelves instead. Theo was supposed to tell Wade about this new dating thing we're trying out while he and Wade were running laps last period, but he bitched out. I'm not a fan of secrets. Secrets can turn people into liars. My lying days are behind me. We wander away from graphic novels and end up in the biography aisle. It is my least favorite section, but here we are because of Wade and Theo. I want my own memoir, Theo says. Only one person can make that happen, I say. I don't have a title yet, Theo says. The whore, Wade says, rubbing his eyes again because his new contacts are bothering him. He still looks like himself for the most part, short hair, brown skin, wrinkled shirts, but I think he looks cooler with his glasses. I'll probably call mine Wading Through Life. Theo fake yawns. I can't wait for that laborious read. Wade flips off Theo. I'm going to get an iced tea from the cafe. You guys want? Yeah, actually. My treat, though. I give Wade a gift card left over from my birthday last month. You sure? Wade asks. I nod. Once he's gone, I give Theo the "why didn't you tell Wade about us" glare, but he turns away, eyes back on the bookshelves. "How about Theo McIntyre, Zombie Pirate Slayer?" I say in the silence. He smiles, still avoiding my gaze.
"But if the zombie pirate apocalypse doesn't happen, it'll get confused as a fantasy novel. I refuse for my existence to be mistaken as fiction, damn it. Maybe I should keep it simple. How about Theo, a memoir?"
I shake my head. "You're my favorite Theo and all, but you're not the only one." He turns to me.
"You know more Theos? Give me their addresses so I can put an end to this madness."
He throws out his hands, like he's ready to karate chop any passing Theos. His fighting stance reminds me of his hipster C-3PO Halloween costume last year. He dressed in a t-shirt resembling the android's body, with gold paint on his face and arms.
"How about C-Theo-PO? "Nah, too insignificant. Cool chapter title, maybe."
Theo raises an eyebrow and points at me.
"I have your title, though. Griffin on the Left."
Now I want to kiss him so badly. It's perfect. I make sure Wade isn't coming, and I pull Theo by his hand, leading him to the next aisle. But I don't act on the kiss because I don't want to rush it or feel like we're doing it behind Wade's back.
"We have to tell Wade, dude," I whisper.
"If you want to do it by yourself, that's cool. But if you want to tell him together, that's also cool. But we're not leaving this bookstore until we do."
"Deal," Theo says, squeezing my hand.
"What time does this store close again?" Whoa, Wade says. He's standing at the end of the aisle, holding a tray of iced teas. I jerk my hand out of Theo's.
"Whoa,"
he repeats, walking towards us. He's Theo's height, but he seems smaller, the way his shoulders sink. He shakes his head and manages a small smile.
"This whole squad business was fun while it lasted."
That's not the reaction I was expecting. "What are you talking about?"
"How long have you two been dating? I knew this was going to happen. You guys doubt my psychic ways, but I called this last year. I just didn't tell anyone."
I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't this.
"You had a vision where Griffin and I were hooking up and the world was going to end?" Theo asks. His voice is weirdly high-pitched.
Wade smirks, handing me an iced tea.
"Pretty much."
"Your visions are kind of gay," Theo jokes, attempting to get a hold of himself. "You should get that checked out." I take a sip, attempting to get a hold of myself, too.
"Wait, how did you know Theo and I liked each other?
Don't say because you're psychic."
"You don't have to be a psychic to have seen this coming. Your chemistry was all over my face."
He hesitates.
"That came out wrong. Anyway, I'm not going to be some third wheel, guys."
3 is a number I've forgiven since yesterday, but only for our squad. It hopefully won't bother me as much now that Theo and I are together, like our personal unit will count as 1, though I probably shouldn't mention that to Wade. It's not game over for us. Think of it as a new game, if anything, with new levels and new worlds.
"New obstacles for me if I want to see you guys, and new game modes exclusive to you two," Wade counters.
"You're welcome to join in our exclusive activities," Theo says with a wink.
Wade goes on to list every example of love gone wrong, mainly from comic books. Green Lantern's girlfriend who was killed and had her corpse stuffed in his fridge. Cyclops and Jean Grey, high school sweethearts who keep losing each other to everything the world throws at them. Ant-Man, who douses the wasp with bug spray, and wow, I didn't realize Ant-Man was so emotionally and physically abusive. A 4th example doesn't follow. Theo turns to me.
"I promise to never bug spray you, Griff. Do you promise to never bug spray me?"
"I promise."
"Lying," I mouth to Wade so that Theo sees, to make the situation normal, or to try to.
Theo takes his iced tea from the tray.
"Are we all good now?" "Promise me you guys won't destroy the squad when you break up,"
Wade says. I can tell by his tone he isn't messing around. This is like seventh grade, when Theo and I kept teasing Wade for getting his name trimmed into his fade, and he laughed for a bit but eventually told us to stop. Maybe he shows some faith in us, dude, Theo says quietly. But sure, I promise, we'll be adults if we do break up. You're 16. You're not an adult, Wade says. I'm counting on us being together for a while, Theo says. I take a deep breath and swear I won't let Wade kill my happy Theo vibes. I also promise I won't destroy the squad if we break up either. Can we please go back to looking at books? Theo gestures for us to come together, and he wraps an arm around both of us. He fake whispers to Wade, We have to do a group hug so Griffin doesn't feel left out. I hate you both, Wade says. We all laugh, and like that it's over, and there are no more secrets. And I keep smiling longer than anyone else, because Theo is betting on us being together for a while. Which is good. It'll give me enough time to come up with the perfect title for his memoir. Today, Monday, November 20th, 2016. I don't want to go in. I don't want to go in. Theo, I don't want to go in. I don't want to go in to say goodbye to you. The funeral chapel on 81st and Madison looks like toy blocks stacked on one another, and weirdly incomplete because it's beige, like they forgot to paint it a real color or thought it'd be inappropriate to do so. I can't believe this is the place your parents chose for your friends and family to say goodbye to you.
I don't have another spot in mind, but wherever it would be, it would have some color.
Doesn't matter for me, at least. I'm not going in there.
Coming in, Griffin?
No, I say. I'm not. I can't. Mom takes the key out of the ignition and stuffs it into her purse.
We'll sit here until you're ready.
She stares straight ahead, where mourners with cups of coffee, no one I recognize, enter the chapel as the hourly bell chimes. I'm okay with missing the 10 o'clock mass. I'm not going to be singing or praying my grief away anytime soon. Mom holds out her hand, and Dad wraps his own around hers, like usual. My parents' love is straight up locked down. I'm too numb to feel it right now, but I really owed all my confidence in our own future to them, because they'd been together since they were teenagers, too. Seeing those hands holding each other when I have to imagine yours and mine pisses me off. I get out of the car and slam the door behind me. The chilly autumn air bites through my jacket and hoodie, breathing in the cold tires out my lungs. The rain isn't coming down hard, but I'm drenched. My parents abandon the warmth of their busted Toyota and keep to my right, respecting the compulsion you sometimes found fascinating. They remain silent. No fortune cookie nonsense. I'm lucky to have parents who know when to go to war with me and when to leave me alone in the battlefield. You're waiting inside. Not you, but you. I owe you a goodbye. If you were here, I'd be inside already, which, well, the weirdness of you talking me into your own funeral isn't lost on me. You are always a pro at getting me to be brave, to take down the walls that could be taken down at least. You can't be faulted for my unbreakable compulsions. At the door, I can sense my parents wanting to reach out. I turn and find a couple of other new faces coming toward us. If I don't know them, then they don't know me. And they won't know why it's so hard for me to put my hand on this damn knob and turn it to go inside, because they don't know our history. They might be friends of your parents or neighbors you spoke about, but I never met. The pressure is building, but no one says anything. I'm pummeling myself to the ground, and I'm drowning without trying to surface all at once. I reach for the doorknob. I walk into a space of stale air and grief. There's a big cutout of your face at the entrance. Your parents chose that awkward photo from your junior class pictures, but not the one we agreed was best, the one that was going to be your author photo on your memoir, where your smile was a little on the shy side, and your blue eyes held a hint of mischief. Maybe it wasn't the impression they wanted others to have of you. It's completely lost on me why your parents went ahead and chose it for your funeral. But I won't say anything. Who knows where Russell's and Ellen's heads are these days? I approach your cutout with my parents shadowing me, offering condolences to God knows who. My eyes lock with yours, flat as they may be. I almost talk myself out of it, but I touch the picture, my fingerprints marking your glossy cheek. My fingers trail down the bronzed card in the bottom center of the frame. I trace each letter. Theodore Daniel McIntyre. February 10th, 1998. November 13th, 2016. Griffin! I really don't want to face Wade right now. I haven't been speaking to him as much over the past couple of months, not since everything that went down between you two recently. He tried reaching out several times over the past week, of course, but I never answered the phone or the door. But I turn. Wade is wearing one of the ties you got him a couple of Christmases ago, and he's picking at a scab on his elbow. He's either avoiding my eyes or his contacts are throwing his attention elsewhere. I'm sure he's feeling guilty for not talking to you when he had the chance. Sorry for your loss, Griffin, Wade says. Your former best friend gets that you're my loss. That's history right there. You too, I manage. I scan the crowd. I'm not surprised the rain didn't affect the huge turnout. I wonder how many of these people have laughed since you died. I'm sure they've smiled at something stupid, like old funny photos in their phones or episodes of some comedy they maybe watched to get your death off their minds. But I want to know if they've busted out laughing so hard their ribcage hurt. I haven't. I'm not mad at any of them if they have. It sucks because I know I'll be alone in my grief for a while. I just want to know when it will be possible to laugh again. And when it'll be okay. Wade's gaze finally fixes on me. You going to talk to Jackson? Even after all this time, his name still strikes a nerve with me. It's not a priority, I say. I should shut up or walk away. I know it's different, but he's probably the only other person here who gets what you're going through. What they had isn't the same, I say in spite of myself, fighting back tears and screams. I look away again so Wade won't try to comfort me. I see your grandfather holding himself up with his cane, your Aunt Clara handing out packages of tissues she probably bought in bulk like everything else, your cousin knitting what looks like a scarf from here, but no sign of your parents. I get it together and ask Wade where they are. Russell went out for a smoke, he says. Been a while. He might be on his fourth by now, and Ellen is already sitting on the front with Denise. With Theo. She's with your body, not you. I'll go find Russell. Before you go, I head for the door. My parents see me move and come for me as if I'm trying to get out of here for good. I stop when my mom asks me where I'm going, asks if I want to go with her to offer my condolences to Ellen. I don't have it in me this second, though. I try to play dumb and focus on my surroundings instead. I find your Uncle Ned in the crowd, reading from the Bible, and catch Aunt Clara busting out her own tissues as she cries with a neighbor I maybe recognize. But my eyes return to the door in no time. Your boyfriend is blocking the entrance. He's staring directly at me. History. Thursday, June 12th, 2014. Our first date, and we discover it's raining when we get off the train. Good news or bad news? Theo asks.
Always get the bad news out of the way first. This is New York, remember? Where were you raised?
I don't have an umbrella, Theo says. And the good news?
I'm telling you now.
Your good news sucks.
If we had time to waste, we'd wait out the storm here at the station. But it's pop culture trivia night at Bonus Diner, this new dinner/arcade near Union Square, and it begins at 6. We haul ass, hating every exposed corner we're forced to wait on before it's our turn to cross the street, and I'm really happy the school year is almost over, because there's no way the textbooks in our backpacks are going to be much use to us after this storm.
Damn, the place is roaring with chatter, but there are tables still free. I feel betrayed by how cold it is in here. Indoor places should always be the opposite of the weather outside.
No one has ever entered a restaurant on a scorching summer day and gotten pissed at the air conditioning. But I'm not letting anything ruin my first date with Theo. I fight through my shivers and register our 2-man team. We're seated at table 16, good number. I run to the bathroom quickly to try and dry myself with paper towels. I return, tagging Theo out to go and do the same. I survey the room, and only then do I feel warmer. We're younger than anyone else here, but I immediately decide all my opponents here are pretty much the coolest people in the universe. Theo returns, rubbing his hands together.
We're going to destroy them.
He checks out the menu. This is another one of those times where I want to lean in and finally kiss him. I'm not trying to get it over with, but I think not having kissed yet in the few days we've been dating is creating some buildup. But maybe a first kiss without a big moment will speak for itself. Maybe it says, hey, I like you when you're not doing anything special. Before I can even consider leaning in, a hostess whistles and silences everyone in the dining area, even some stragglers at the pool tables and pinball machines nearby. She runs through the rules. There will be 20 questions. I'll fill in the blank. There will be a minute each to answer them. There will be volunteers walking around the room to make sure no one's cheating. Prize for third place is a book of coupons for a gift shop online. Prize for second place is a replica of the sword and shield from The Legend of Zelda: Twilight Princess. The grand prize is a boxed set of the first 6 Star Wars movies, Director's Cut Edition. I suddenly desperately want to win because maybe I'll become just as obsessed as he is and we can do stuff like host Star Wars-themed Halloween parties for our friends. Okay, I need to take a step back and take this relationship 1 week at a time. Waitresses and waiters pass out papers and pens as they collect food orders. Once they've cleared the floor, the hostess announces we're beginning in 1 minute. Theo turns to me and my heart is trying to headbutt itself out of my chest.
Question 1.
It doesn't take long to see that this evening is mostly about older people who want to get drunk. Within minutes, we're kicking ass. The planet Hoth in The Empire Strikes Back was shot where? Norway, thanks Theo. The writer behind Toy Story and Firefly? Joss Whedon. The only character on The Simpsons with 10 fingers? God. The last Harry Potter book was published in 2007, but the series actually ended in 1998.
You're welcome, Theo.
Teamwork.
Final question.
I'm pretty sure we're 19 for 19, so we can't mess this up.
Which actor couldn't do the Vulcan salute in 2009 Star Trek?
Theo writes down Zachary Quinto's name and hands our sheet over to the nearest volunteer.
We got this. Get ready for a marathon at my house.
It takes about 20 minutes for the judges to review the answers when a bell dings. The hostess returns to the front of the room and coughs very dramatically.
I'm pleased to announce there is a tie between 2 teams, but since we only have 1 box set, we're going to have a live tiebreaker. Can I get 1 representative from Team Stark Kirk and 1 from Team Human Pirates?
Yes,
Theo gets up, and I hope he wins this for us. You, up.
What?
No, you go.
I elect you.
I pick up the napkin and wave it.
I forfeit.
Technically, you surrender when you're waving the white flag. It's a small but important difference. See? You're smarter. You do it. You got this, Griff. I believe in you. Go.
Theo nudges me to the front of the room